the matter tonight for discussion is the proclamation of Baha'u'llah. And Saeed Sapir has prepared the program for this evening.
Sorry, I'm not as pretty as this girl.
Try hard.
I just put on my best face. As you heard, we're going to talk about the proclamation of Baha'u'llah tonight. The proclamation of Baha'u'llah actually took place in several stages. It started actually way back during the this proclamation, which I call but will not call proclamation, was kind of a secret, and it was derived by some people on their own. They knew of the station of Baha'u'llah. And you will find in many passages of God Passes By and in Dawnbreakers many references which showed that a lot of people who were, they knew the station of Baha'u'llah. They recognized it. There was an instance in Badash that 81 Babis were gathered there. And this, in difference to what Mr. Banani said, and I discussed this with him, Baha'u'llah gave a lot of the titles conference. And definitely Baha'u'llah gave the title of Tahereh. And later on, when some of the Babis complained to Bab about the Tahereh indiscreetly rejecting the time-honored traditions of Islam because she took off the veil and she came in with a man and all of the things that she did. When they complained to Bab, he said, "What can I say about the one in the tongue of power has named Tahereh?" This gave a clue to a lot of Babis as to the station of Baha'u'llah. In my mind, it is very clear that the Bab knew who Baha'u'llah was, definitely, because of the things that he did and the letters that he wrote to the Bab, to Baha'u'llah. This is very clear to my mind. But this is not something that you can really establish clearly. But this is sort of a beginning of Baha'u'llah's ministry and coming into his leadership. But throughout the history of the faith, and even when he was a Babi, Baha'u'llah was a prominent figure. He was a king. Wherever he went, that he had the reign of everything in his hands. He was a very powerful figure, he was very knowledgeable, he had the majesty that just came with him, and everybody was at awe when confronted with him, even his enemies. The people at the court of the Shah knew of him, and they all were at awe with him, of his majesty. Now, the next stage of Baha'u'llah's declaration, or coming into the declaration, is in Siyah Chaw. And you know all about the circumstances in Siyah Chaw and the conditions that existed there. In Siyah Chaw, of course, Bab got his revelation from God. And there are passages in God Passes By that I would like to read or just refer to in page 101 of the manner of this thing, this revelation to Baha'u'llah. And this is the words of Shoghi Effendi. He says, wrapped in its Antigean gloom, breathing its fetid air, numbered by its humid and icy atmosphere, his feet in stocks, his neck weighed down by a mighty chain, surrounded by criminal and miscreant of the worst order, oppressed by the consciousness of the terrible blot that has stained the fair name of his beloved faith, painfully aware of the dire distress that has overtaken its champion, and of the grave dangers that face the remnant of its followers, at so critical an hour and under such appalling circumstances, the most greatest spirit, as designated by himself and symbolized in the Zoroastrian, the Mosaic, the Christian, and Mohammedan dispensation, by the sacred fire, the burning bush, the dove, and the angel Gabriel, respectively, descended upon him and revealed itself, personated by a maiden, to agonize soul of Baha'u'llah. In these conditions, this maiden that he refers, that symbolizes the revelation, the message of God, or whatever brings the message of God to him. Revelation came to him, and he said, this is Baha'u'llah, he says, one night in a dream, these exalted words were heard on every side. Verily, we shall render thee victorious by thyself and by thy pen. Grieve thou not for that which hath befallen thee. Neither be thou afraid, for thou art in safety. Ere long will God rise up the treasures of the earth, men who will aid thee through thyself and through thy name, wherewith God hath revived the hearts of such as have recognized it. Now in this passage, this is the beginning of the revelation of Baha'u'llah. And Shoghi Effendi says, when God passes by, that these treasures of the land may very well be the letter of living who became Baha'i, like some of them who became, and the people like, specifically I think he talks about the Badi, who took the local the letter or the epistle of Baha'u'llah to the Sultan of Persia, the King of Persia. So this was the first thing mentioned of it. Again, in another place, he mentioned how he felt when this revelation came to him. You know, every prophet of God has described how he felt when the revelation came to him. Some of them were very afraid, fell on their faces, you know, ran home to their wives. Muhammad did. So Baha'u'llah describes here how he felt. And he says, during the days I lay in the prison of Tehran, though the galling weight of the chain and the stench-filled air allowed me but little sleep, still in those infrequent moments of slumber, I felt as if something flowed from the crown of my head over my breast, even as a mighty torrent that precipitated itself upon the earth from the summit of a lofty mountain. Every limb of my body would, as a result, be set afire. At such moments, my tongue recited what no man could hear, could bear to hear. So this is the manner he received it and how he felt. Can imagine, you know, all of a sudden becoming the mouthpiece of God, and he was pretty shook up. Although I'm sure he had the inkling that he was destined for something great. Of course, it is very difficult for us to, you know, to consider things like this, because as Dr. Banani said, we are living in a surrounding, in situation, in atmosphere that is not conducive to the spiritual growth. So people are not sensitive to these things. Whereas these people who devoted their lives to search, and they were so pious, and they did all of the things that they were supposed to do. These people were very sensitive, and as a result of this sensitivity, they could see things, they could feel their way. The things came to them, whereas it is very difficult for the people today to be able to do that. Maybe in the future, when the world order of Baha'u'llah gets established, then this becomes possible, because man will have enough time to devote to their spirituality rather than to scratching for a living or trying to beat the other guy to the punch or whatever. So, again in his Surah of Hikal, he says, this he proclaims his message. He says, the most great spirit, while engulfed in the tribulations, I heard a most wondrous, the most sweet voice, calling above my head. Turning my face, I beheld a maiden, the embodiment of the remembrance of the name of my Lord, suspended in the air before me. So rejoiced was she in her very soul that her countenance shone with the ornament of the good pleasure of God, and her cheeks glowed with the brightness of all merciful. Betwixt earth and heaven she was raised, and called, which captivated the hearts and minds of men. She was imparting to both my inward and outer being tidings which rejoiced my soul and the soul of God's honored servants. Pointing with her finger unto my head, she addressed all who are in heaven and all who are on earth, saying, by God, this is the best beloved of the world, and yet ye comprehend not. This is the beauty of God amongst you, and the power of His sovereignty within you, could ye but understand. This is the mystery of God and His treasure, the cause of God and His glory unto all who are in the kingdom of revelation and of creation, if ye be of them that perceive. In the epistle to Nasiruddin Shah, he again talks about his revelation. He says, O King, I was but a man like others. I'm sure most of us have heard this. Asleep upon my couch, when lo, the breeze of all glorious were wafted over me, and taught me the knowledge of all that had been. This thing is not from me, but from one who is almighty and all-knowing. And he bade me lift up my voice between earth and heaven. And for this there befell me what hath caused the tears of every man of understanding to flow. This is but a leaf which the winds of the will of thy Lord, the Almighty, the All-Praised, hath steered. His all-compelling summons hath reached me, and caused me to speak his praise amidst all people. I was indeed as one dead when his behest was uttered. The hand of the will of thy Lord, the compassionate, the merciful, transformed me. By my life, he has said in other tablets, not one of mine own volitions have I revealed myself, but God of his own choosing had manifested me. So he says, he wasn't really willing, it wasn't his volition, he was chosen. All of a sudden, he was it. Now this revelation happened in the city of Tehran. And because of this, he has in many tablets alluded to city of Tehran, and he has named city of Tehran the holy land, the mother of the world, the day spring of light, the dawning place of the signs of the Lord, source of the joy of all mankind, which makes me very happy. By looking at it, I couldn't say that. But the signs are already there that it's going to be. Things are happening and going very well. There have been many instances that I heard that Abdu'l-Bahá knew of the station of Baha'u'lláh actually became a Baha'i before anybody else. But according to Shoghi Effendi, in God Passes By, Abdul Baha was not the first Baha'i. Now, the first Baha'i, this is another stage now. This Baha'u'llah had, up to this time now, he had received the revelation. He didn't tell anybody. He did not proclaim it to anybody. And it went 10 years before he actually publicly proclaimed his mission. 10 years had to pass. But before he made his public declaration, there was a man, let me see what his name was. His name was Mirza Aghajan. Later, Baha'u'llah surnamed him Khadimullah. The same name as Mr. Khadimullah. This was the first man who actually became a Baha'i. And this happened before the declaration of Baha'u'llah. This man was another one of those who were in tune. And he had the sensitivity. In a dream, he dreamt of the Bab. And because of that dream, and because of reading some of the writings of Baha'u'llah, he got the whim that Baha'u'llah is the one. Of course, you know, Bab had promised that somebody will come, the one whom God will make manifest. And the Babis were waiting. This man, Mirza Aghajan, he had this dream which upset him and got him started in reading some of the things, and he found the writings of Baha'u'llah, and he, through his sensitivity, he made the decision that Baha'u'llah must be the one. So he left everything he had, and by the way, he came from the city of Kashan, and that's where the three wise men came from. He got up, left everything, and he went to Qazamain, where Baha'u'llah was staying at the time, and he threw himself to the feet of Baha'u'llah, and he said he wants to be with Baha'u'llah. He wants to serve him. So he actually became one of the Baha'u'llah's servants. He stayed all of his life with Baha'u'llah and became one of his secretaries.
Right.
Yes?
That's the same one who became a covenant secretary.
I'm not aware of that. I didn't know it. But nevertheless, he, at that time, the man was in the right path. He had the sensitivity, and you know, Baha'u'llah says, "You never know." He said, "Many a man who has been a pious." This is Baha'u'llah. He says, "A pious, God abiding and all of this, and in the hour of death he may completely change and go to the ebb of nothingness, you know, the depth of nothingness. And many a man who all his life has been a sinner and whatever, at the last moment of his life he may completely change and go the other way." So it is possible for a person, according to Baha'u'llah, that a man could be in the right path and could have all the qualities and had done great deeds, and yet later on something gets to him. And who knows? You know, with the standard of us, the things that we are supposed to be obeying with and using, the standard, like he's a covenant breaker, he's cast away, you don't talk to him. But who knows what the mercy of God would do to him? This is where mercy comes in. That we cannot judge him. God will judge him. Anyway, this man actually has, he relates a story. He says one night when he was at the presence of Baha'u'llah, You know, nights get very, very warm, that part of the world. And at the time, these houses, these clay houses with flat roofs, which still exist in some parts of Middle East, people used to go on top of the roof and they slept there in open air. And I've done it myself, so I know how nice it is. Baha'u'llah and this person were up on the roof and they were sleeping. This Mirza Aghajan became very restless. He couldn't sleep. So he got up and he went to one corner of the roof adjoining to another wall, and he started to pray. When all of a sudden Baha'u'llah got up and he marched toward him, and when he reached him he said, "You two can't sleep, huh?" Then at that time he started walking back and forth and reciting words, which Mirza Aghajan, you know, couldn't comprehend. It was so fascinating, so wonderful. He was just at awe. He didn't know what to do. Now I will go to page 116 and I will read some of the things that he said. This is God passes by. He says, "How shall I ever describe that voice and the verses it intoned and his gait as he strode before me? Methinks with every step he took and every word he uttered, thousands of oceans of light surged before my face, and thousands of worlds of incomparable splendor were unveiled to my eyes, and thousands of suns blazed their light upon me. In the moonlight that streamed upon him, he that continued to walk and to chant, every time he approached me, he would pause and in a tone so wondrous that no tongue can describe it, would say, 'Hear me, my son, by God, the True One, his cause will assuredly be made manifest. Heed thou not the idle talk of the people of the Bayan, who prevent the meaning of every word.' In this manner he continued to walk and chant and to address me these words until the first streak of dawn appeared. Afterwards I removed his bedding to his room, and having prepared his tea for him, he dismissed me and he went." So this was
actually
Baha'u'llah proclaimed to him who he was.
And
he told them not to say anything to anybody. But this man was the first man who knew, and Baha'u'llah had privately to this man declared himself his station. Now, we go, after this stage comes his public declaration. And that happens in the city of Baghdad, in the Garden of Rizwan. Now, when Baha'u'llah was in the city of Baghdad, let's just go back a little bit. The Babi dispensation was a short dispensation. Now, in a matter of a few years, it had started, had gone to its peak, and had fallen down to its ebb, which is the cycle that every revelation goes through, every dispensation goes through the same thing. It starts low, then it picks up, it goes to its height of glory, and it comes down to the depth of nothingness, and the new revelation comes. Each time goes a little bit higher. Now, the dispensation of the Bab was a very short one, and at the time Baha'u'llah was in the Garden of Rizwan, the dispensation of Bab had gone down to the end of its life, and the Babis were in very sad shape, and the morality was down and everything. Now in this situation, Baha'u'llah declared himself to the Babis. Now when he was there in the Garden of Rizwan, he definitely established himself as a leader. Everybody knew, everybody used to come to him, and he already had revealed many tablets to many of the Babis and not Babis who had asked him questions. He had given them answers, clear answers, beautiful answers. His fame really got out, and the people from the city of Baghdad, the non-Baha'is, used to come, flock to the house of Baha'u'llah, asking him questions or just desiring to see him. Now, these really were very joyous days, and at the end of this period, some of the Babis recall that every morning the gardener would go and cut flowers. There was lots of rose bushes around. They would cut flowers and bring and heat them in the tent of Baha'u'llah. And the Babis come early in the morning to his tent to have their tea. And Baha'u'llah would disperse every one of them, giving them some flowers. These were very joyous days, although there was a lot of turbulence at the beginning. Now, under these circumstances, just a day before he left for Istanbul, he declared publicly to the Babis who were there that he was the one that the Bab had promised. He is the one that God would make manifest, and he is the one. And at this time, then he left. One day after that, he left. Yes. Yes.
But only from what I have read, it says that from the day that he entered the garden, nothing was kept in hidden, and everything was open, and everyone knew about the mission of Allah.
Well, it's in the.
It says on the 21st day of April, 1863, that is when
he left. Right. And the next day he left. This is what I got from God Passes By, and it says in the eve of his departure, he declared to the Babi. That's exactly what it says in here.
But after he declared, then he went to the garden for the ritual. No. On the eve of his departure.
You see, there was the first of all, there was no Nowruz that they celebrated, which is the Persian festivity. And then came when he actually declared himself. I may be wrong, but this is what it says. In the eve of his departure, he declared. But before that, it had been already established his leadership and everybody was, you know, flocking around him. He was the central figure of this gathering. Anyway, he departed for Istanbul, and in Istanbul he stayed for a short while, and there was a collusion between the Persian minister and some of the ministers of the Sultan of Turkey, which eventually caused the banishment of Baha'u'llah to Adrianople. Adirne. In Adirne, Baha'u'llah in Baghdad, Baha'u'llah revealed three of his most weighty books. The Hidden Words were revealed in Baghdad. The Seven Valleys were revealed in Baghdad. This was an answer to a question of a prominent Sufi figure. He wrote this book, one who spoke to him. And Kitab-e-Iqan, the Book of Sirtu, was revealed in Baghdad. And this was in answer to an uncle of the Bab. Okay, now, when he reached Adrianople, he revealed the Loh of Sultan, which is the tablet to the king. Not the Loh of Sultan, I don't recall exactly the Persian name of it or the Arabic name. But the tablet to the kings was revealed in Adrianople. And this is the first time that Baha'u'llah addressed, outside the small gathering, addressed the totality of mankind through these kings. Now, Baha'u'llah felt, I'm sure, and this is what Shoghi Effendi also mentions here, God passes by, that since at that time the authority and the lives of people were vested upon the hands of the rulers, the kings, and the ecclesiasts, the clergy, therefore he had to deliver his call to these people, because these were the people who were steering everything. The whole world was revolving around them. So they were the authority figures. And Baha'u'llah felt that he should deliver his message to these people, because these people are the ones who are responsible for the world as it was at that time. And that's why he revealed his tablets to the king, and then he revealed it to the clergy. And later on, he delivered many messages to the totality of mankind in his book of Akdas. Now, going to the tablet to the kings, which is very, very important tablet. He says, O kings of the earth, he who is the sovereign Lord of all is come. And then he exhorts them to be just, to consider the poor in their midst as the trustees of God. He says, also in this he says, that the most great law had appeared. Now, up to that time, you know, there was monarchies, and the kings really didn't have any laws. There were not that many laws established, except maybe in England. Well, for most part, the world was run by monarchs who didn't follow any set rules. The life of people were in their hands. They could do anything they wanted. And in this tablet, he says that the most great law had been revealed. He also says, ye are but vassals, O kings of the earth. He who is the king of kings has appeared. Now he says, you are just vassals. The king of kings have appeared. This is a weighty tablet. Really, he establishes, he says, I am the king. Arise and serve him who is the desire of all nations. But he also goes and says that it is not our desire to lay hands on your kingdoms. Our mission is to seize and possess the hearts of men. He wanted the hearts of men. And I was talking to Jim Lewis this afternoon, and he said he was very clever. If he could seize the hearts of men, he had everything. So that. But this is what he said. This very, very interesting thing he reveals in this tablet, and he talks about a great king, a just king that will come and will adhere to his cause. And I would like to read some of the passages that he talks about this thing, and he also mentions this, I think, in another tablet that we'll go over. Okay, page 6. This is in the Proclamation of Baha'u'llah, page 6. He says, how great is the blessedness that awaiteth the king who will arise to aid my cause in my kingdom, who will detach himself from all else but me. Such a king is numbered with the companions of the Crimson Ark, the Ark which God had prepared for the people of Baha. all must glorify his name, must reverence his station, and aid him to unlock the cities with the keys of my name. The omnipotent protector of all that inhabit the visible and invisible kingdoms. Such a king is the very eye of mankind, the luminous ornament on the brow of creation, the fountainhead of blessings unto the whole world. Offer up, O people of Baha, your substance, nay, your very lives, for his assistance. We have asked nothing from you for the sake of God. We verily exhort you and will be patient, as we have been patient, in that which befallen us at your hands, O conquerors of kings. But this was really part of it. He mentions here that a king will arise. Now this is not very clear, just one second. It's not very clear that he's talking about a specific king that will arise. But he's saying, how great is the blessedness that awaited the king who will arise. It's not clear whether it will arise or he says if he arises. But in another tablet that I will go over later on, it is pretty clear that he's talking about a specific king. So this was very interesting, the sideline out of this tablet to the king. Yes. Okay. Right. Otherwise, he says, even though he may not be this is the way I can understand it, even though he may not be a Baha'i, but he will be numbered amongst the people of Baha'i. Yes? I see. Could be, could very well be. But this, you know, these things, you cannot really sit down and make a judgment on them, a definite judgment of what it means. But it's there, and you can look at it, and you can draw whatever conclusion you want to draw. But this is a very interesting sideline that appears in the book. In another passage he says, O concourse of kings, follow therefore that which I speak unto you, and hearken unto it with your hearts, and be not of such as have turned aside. For your glory consisted not in your sovereignty, but rather in your nearness unto God and your observance of his command, as sent down in his holy and preserved tablets. Should any one of you rule over the whole earth, and over all that lieth within it and upon it, its seas, its lands, its mountains, and its plains, and yet be not remembered by God, all these would profit him not, could he but know it. Arise then, and make steadfast your feet, and make ye amends for that which hath escaped you, and set then yourselves towards his holy court. He's giving them another chance. He says, you didn't do what you're supposed to be doing, but raise up and amend what you didn't do. Then later on he goes on and says, if you pay no heed unto the counsels which in peerless and unequivocal language we have revealed in this tablet, divine chastisements shall assail you from every direction, and the sentence of his justice shall be pronounced against you. On that day ye shall have no power to resist him, and shall recognize your own importance. So first of all, he tells them his mission. Also he tells them of his condition. And then he tells them to heed his call. After that, he gives them another chance. He says, we delivered the message to you. You didn't heed. Now it's your last chance. Then he goes on and he says that divine chastisement will follow you. And we all know what happened to all of the monarchs and the kings that were in the height of power in the time of Baha'u'llah. Later on, not only themselves, but their dynasties disappeared because they didn't heed to the call of Baha'u'llah. So this tablet to the kings is actually his first public worldwide pronunciation of his mission and declaration to the world. Now he has revealed many tablets, specific tablets, I'm sure you know, to the kings and rulers of the world. He declared, his longest tablet was to the Shah of Persia. And he calls him, in another tablet, he calls him the Prince of Oppressors. Of course, you know what kind of a person he was. Under his reign, thousands of Baha'is were slaughtered. And Baha'u'llah writes to him, and again, he proclaims his fate and asks him, he says, bring me to your court and bring any divines that you have and you become the judge and let me prove my case to you. He says, it was proven to you my innocence, because at the beginning he was accused to have plotted with the two Babis who tried to assassinate the Shah. He says, it was beyond the shadow of the doubt proven to you that I was not involved. I was innocent. Now, although you found out that our innocence, you sent us to all of these tribulations. Your ministers colluded with the ministers of the Sultan of Turkey to send us to the city of Akka. He says, now I'm asking you, bring me to your court and bring whoever you want to examine me and let me prove my case. Then he goes on and he tells them that he doesn't desire anything. No worldly things he desires. And although it has not been translated, I haven't seen it here. This is a very long tablet. And in this tablet, which I read in Persian, he gives a story. It's not a story. Actually, it's an actual example. He tells them, O Shah, when I was a youth, he says, in the wedding of my older brother, I saw a puppet show. So they had big celebration at that time, you know, 7-8 nights they would celebrate, and they had all kind of shows for the wedding celebration. And Baha'u'llah describes this puppet show to the king. He says, there was this puppet show, and there came the king sitting there in his all glory with the throne, the throne and the everything, all of the glory of the king, and the ministers marched in, came and reported to the king about the things that are happening in one corner of the empire and the things that happen in the other corner of the empire. Then marched in the soldiers with guns and ammunition, preparing for war with another nation. All of these things. He goes on beautifully explaining all of this. He says, then from the behind the scene came the noise of the war, and they said that the armies of the Shah were fighting the enemy and this and that. He explains this very beautifully. He says, then after all of this, a man came from behind the scene with a little black box in his hand. And they told us that all of the empire of the Shah and the soldiers and the ministers and everything is in that box. This was a puppet show. So he said to the Shah, he says, O Shah, know this, that all of the greatness that you think is great in this world, all of the empires, all of the treasures of the world, to me looks like that in that box. It's of no importance. He Shah. But of course, Shah, you know what happened to the messenger of the Shah, messenger of Baha'u'llah to the Shah. His name was Badi, a youth of 17 years old. This is a good example for our youth. You know, when Baha'u'llah wrote the tablet to the Shah of Persia, he had already written it, ready to go. And the Baha'is who would come to the presence of Baha'u'llah, who would know about this, he would ask Baha'u'llah to please let them carry this to the Shah. Of course, this was a very dangerous mission, and these people were putting their life in the line. A great, you know, sacrifice. But Baha'u'llah would always refuse. He says, no, the one who's going to carry it is not here yet. Now, Badi was a kind of a person whose parents didn't think much of him, and they didn't think that he would come up to any good. He was a youth. But he was another sensitive person who was in tune. And he one day decided that he wants to go and see Baha'u'llah. And he got up and he walked all the way, journeyed through deserts from one country to another and another to Akka. And he got to see Baha'u'llah. When he arrived, Baha'u'llah said, the one that I was waiting for is here. Everybody was at awe. This 17 years old youth. So he carried, again, the same way he came. If he walked back through all this land, he walked back to the land of Persia, to the city of Tehran. And the Shah would come once in a while, throw alms to the poor. This was his habit. He would come and throw a few pennies, trying to, in his mind, make up for all of the things that he had done. This was his habit. He would come and do this. And in one of these occasions, this youth came and all of a sudden stood up and looked the Shah into the eye. And he told the Shah that he had a weighty message for him. And by the looks and by the majesty and the way that he stood up and he talked to the Shah knew immediately that whose message was that. So immediately they arrested him and took the message from him. And they started torturing him, this 17 years old boy, asking him who his accomplices were. Of course, he had no accomplice. He bore all of these tortures with complete serenity. He didn't flinch, he didn't cry, he didn't kneel down. He just took it. And finally, they bashed his head in with the butt of a rifle. And he was martyred. So this message of Baha'u'llah is the lengthiest message to any king was delivered in this way to the Shah of Persia. Another interesting side line here is that Badi's father was also martyred. And the story of that appears in Dawnbreakers, and that's a very interesting story. I will just go through it shortly, which is very interesting. He was the son of a very, very wealthy person, Badi's father was. And the father had one of the most valuable mines of turquoise in Khorasan, a part of Persia that had the best turquoise in the world. It's very famous. The father owned this mine. He had immeasurable wealth. You know. When he became this man, was in his maybe 20s, 25 or something like that, when he heard of the call of the Ba'al, and he decided that he wants to join. And he joined the ranks of the Babis. And he went with the band of Mullah Hussein, the first Babi, to go to Khorasan. When they were going, at a certain junction, Mullah Hussein stopped everybody, this whole companion, and he said, this is a good point that anybody who wants to depart, depart. because from here on, you're going through a lot of tribulation. A lot of problems will come. A lot of sacrifices will come. So anybody who fears his life, his family, whatever, let him go right now. And after all of those left, he told everybody, he said, now that we are going to this journey, we want everybody to know, because they have told that the Babis are coming and they're going to plunder your cities and do this and that. He says, we want everybody to know that we are not after any worldly thing. So, except for food and your horses and your sword, just throw away everything else that you have. Now this boy, this man, the father of Badi, had brought with him a big bundle of the most valuable turquoise that his father's mine had produced. And it was an immeasurable wealth. You know, it was very, very expensive. You couldn't, you know, count how much it was worth. He was the first man who took that bundle and threw it away. Later on, he went on to be martyred. One of the conflicts, he was martyred. So this was his father, the father of this youth. And the youth even didn't get to the age of his father. 17 years old. The tablet of Sultan, the loaf of Sultan that went to the Shah of Persia. How much time do we have? Okay, well, we go through a few things here real fast. Of course, after this, Baha'u'llah from Adrianople and later on from Akka wrote to many of the monarchs and the emperors of the world. And these are, again, another part of his declaration. He wrote to Napoleon, the great Napoleon that is very famous, and we know in this tablet. He told them to stop tolling the bells, that the most great bell has appeared and is being run by the hand of God. And he told them to cast away his wealth and come to him, because he's the one that is the King of Kings. And he gave him, proclaimed his message to him. And he was very powerful in this tablet. And his majesty comes very, very intensely. And this message was delivered to him by one of the ambassadors, was given to the ambassador and sent to France, and he received this tablet of Baha'u'llah.
Excuse me, I don't want the message
to get excited. The children now are in the crash line. And they're supposed to say that it's going to be. When he got the message, of course, when he got the message, he read it, and because of the majesty and the way that Baha'u'llah had addressed him, he got the idea that Baha'u'llah was saying that he was God. He didn't even go through the book, through the tablet, you know, deep enough to understand what Baha'u'llah was saying. And he threw the tablet behind him and he said, if he is God, I'm two gods. And of course we know that Baha'u'llah wrote him tablet and told him, because of what he had done, his kingdom will go out of his hand and chaos will take over his land. And this is exactly what had happened. After a few years, although he was, when Baha'u'llah wrote to him, he was in the height of power. Napoleon was in the height of power. He was the king of Europe. Nobody could stand against him. Later on, everything gradually went out of his hand and he was exiled and later on died. So this is the story of the tablet. This is another proclamation, specific proclamation to one king. Baha'u'llah also wrote to the Tsar of Russia and he told them, one other thing that Baha'u'llah told Napoleon, he said Napoleon had already given some reasons why he had to go through the Crimean War. And he had said that he had dreamt his dreams, and he had heard the lamentations of some of the people of the region that he went and fought, that they were being oppressed and they were being downtrodden. So he's going to save them. So Baha'u'llah tells him in that, in his tablet, he says, if you are defendant of the oppressed one, here is the most oppressed of the world, sitting here in this prison with no cause for it. So come and rescue me. This is, by the way, a theme that goes through all of his tablets. He proclaims his mission. He tells them of his condition, that he's there and he's been wronged and there is no reason for it. And he asks these monarchs to come and bring justice to him. So this was another time that he mentioned this to French Emperor Napoleon. He also wrote to the Tsar Alexander of Russia, and he told him that one of his ministers, this minister was the person who helped Baha'u'llah get out of the Siyah Chaw, and he was in the Siyah Chaw because he was so also in awe with the station of Baha'u'llah. He knew Baha'u'llah, and he tells the Tsar, he says, because of one of your ministers helped me get out of the Siyah Chaw, there is a great station preserved for you. Don't spoil it. And he gives them the clear message. But of course the Tsar did not heed his call. Baha'u'llah went on and wrote another tablet to Francis Joseph of Austria, who was also the king of Hungary, I believe. Isn't that true, Fred? Emperor of Austria and Hungary. And he told them that you came through, he told this emperor, he says, you came through Akka for a pilgrimage and you passed me by. The one who is the object of adoration of all mankind, the one that everybody has been waiting for. He says, actually your act of coming to this city of Akka has been designed to glorify my name. He says, you were so blind, you came by and you passed me and you went through the things that you did without knowing what you were doing. And he goes through the same things with him, gives him his call and his message. This, he went on with some other monarchs. He wrote to the Queen Victoria, and she was, by the way, the only one who gave a short reply to the message of Baha'u'llah. And of course, you know, that kingdom is the only true kingdom in the world that still exists because of that. And Baha'u'llah says that we heard you did a great deed, and that was the abolishment of trade of slaves, both man and woman. He wrote to clergies all over, to most prominent clergies in the world. Of course, he wrote to the Pope. And you know what happened to the Pope. He wrote to Zoroastrian clergies, to the Muslim clergies, to the Sunni clergies. And after he had written all of these tablets and everybody either had refused him or didn't answer, then he went on and he said, this is one of his words, he said, from two ranks of men, power had been seized, the kings and ecclesia. So now he had given them all the clear message. He had told them what they should be doing. He asked them to come and get him out of the prison, accept his cause, investigate it. And when they all refused, he said, from two ranks of men, power has been seized, from kings and ecclesias. And today we see that the kings have gone and ecclesias have lost their power and they're in their way out. So this is, in a nutshell, some of the stories about the declaration of Baha'u'llah.